Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, Stan Friedman here from FRM Solutions. You're tuned to Social Geek Radio with Deb Evans and Jack Munson.
Well, this is Deb Evans coming to you live from Houston, Texas, where it's nice and sunny and bright and hot and wonderful because I now have air conditioning in my office. So it broke earlier in the week, but we're cool now. How are you, Jack Munson?
I'm very well. Jack Munson from Minolta here coming to you live from Nashville, Tennessee, which is sunny and hot and humid and all of those things, just with a little bit better music. So
yeah.
Good evening, Deb. And everyone,
good evening.
Social Geek Radio. It is 8 o'clock in the east and 5 o'clock in the west. And we have a fantastic guest tonight to talk to us about customer experiences. And Deb, I'll let you jump right in and introduce our guest.
I will. So, we have to start with a story. Probably 4 years ago, when I was first starting Social Geek Radio, had been doing it for a couple months, BJ Emerson talked me into meeting him in New York City for Word of Mouth Conference. I think that's what it was. Was really cool. They had some fabulous speakers all talking about social media, and I was learning and trying to absorb as much as I could. Got to watch Tony Hsieh speak, and I met this wonderful young lady who was the author of a book called I Love You More Than My Dog, and she was walking around with a stuffed Dalmatian dog, and I'm looking over at her at breakfast, and I'm thinking, who is she, and what is she doing with that dog? So, shy as I'm always am, I decided to introduce myself.
Yes, of course.
Like, okay,
shy.
She must be somebody. She must be somebody, and she's going to do something. And I don't know what this dog's for. Well, we had a great conversation. We met Jeannie Bliss. She talked to us. She was going to be one of our speakers, because I didn't know that at the time. She had this wonderful book about I Love You More Than My Dog. It's about decisions that drive extreme customer loyalty. I went to her session. We took lots of pictures. And actually, Jeannie was on Social Geek Radio then a few months later. So she's on the line now, and I'm so excited to have you back after so many years. I haven't seen you since then.
Yeah, where have you been?
Where have I been? I'm in Texas. I haven't gone to another conference that you're presenting at. I've got to follow you more closely so that I can come to your presentations. But I did see on LinkedIn your newest book, Chief Customer Officer, and you were so kind to send me the first chapter, and it's about how to build your customers, a driven growth engine, and I'm excited to have you talk a little bit more about that book and share those experiences with us. The Chief Customer Officer. Jack, have you heard of Chief Customer Officers before?
I haven't, but as soon as I saw the title of this, I thought, I may need a new title. So,
no,
so
I know.
And if I could,
Jeannie,
if I could correct to smart people, it's actually Chief Customer Officer 2.0. This is 10 years later, the revised version of the first Chief Customer Officer book.
Yeah, I have to
right
say, I don't have the first one, but I've got the second one. So.
It's 2.0, yeah.
So, Jeannie, exactly what is a Chief Customer Officer?
Well, think of the chief customer officer as the human duct tape of the organization. And
oh, I like that.
Right? Because listen to this and think about big business, almost even small businesses, are made up of a lot of people working really hard inside of their operating areas or silos, marketing, operations, sales. Now we've got channels, right? The web channel, the retail channel, the social media people. But everybody's working hard separately, and nobody's thinking about the business from the customer's journey standpoint, and the experience we deliver to customers is the cobbled-together defaulted experience, which is the result of everybody working hard separately. And so the chief customer officer changes the starting point for the business and unites the company to start from the customer's point of view and also connects the dots to revenue and growth and creates a new kind of decision-making toolkit around the organization of what they will and will not do to grow the business.
Wow.
You
we
like
need
that?
More chief customer officers. I do like that.
I know, human duct tape. There you go.
Human.
I've been called the Velcro Man, meaning if there's anything that's crummy about the customer experience, you walk down the hall and stuff just starts sticking to you. And that's kind of the, that's not what you want the job to be. That's the default role, which is, oh, this stinks, let's give it to Gene, or this stinks, let's give it, that's really reactionary. But this role, when it's really done right, is strategic, unites the C-suite, and is drives a new deliberate way around running the business.
Cool.
So are there a lot of chief customer officers out there in America right now? Is this something that you see catching on, or is this something that we should be looking at 2 years down the road?
Well, it's actually a growing trend, and there's lots of different titles for this. I call this Chief Customer Officer 2.0 as a proxy. So I'm the co-founder of the Customer Experience Professionals Association, and we have a lot of people who might be called the Senior VP or VP of Customer Experience. These people have that human duct tape role as well. There's been some good research out there. Over about 25%, a little bit less maybe, of the Fortune 100 now have Chief Customer Officers. The Global 1000, it's a lot less, but they're thinking about it more. More and more companies are establishing customer experience as a competency that has to be inside of their organization. And there's really two forcing functions that cause this. One is the economic downturn. Again, people, for the first time really, as far as I'm concerned, recognize from a leadership standpoint, we've got to do more in a deliberate way to keep the customers we've got and grow them versus just keep on going back to the well and trying to get new customers. And then the other thing that's been a powerful, and I'm so happy for this forcing function, is social media. You know, you can run, but you can't hide.
Right.
What your customers have to say is what's really happening to them. And so now leaders are finally saying, okay, we got to get our act together. We've got to get good at this.
Well,
you know, it's interesting you mentioned the social part of it, because I was just looking at the subtitle of the first version of your
yep.
Chief Customer Officer book, and the subtitle I love is Getting Past Lip Service to Passionate Action. And it feels to me like social media has done two things for a lot of brands, or allowed two things for a lot of brands. One, it's allowed some transparency and people getting real and people really helping their customer. But it's also allowed for a lot of lip service, right?
Yeah, it has, and that's why the second book, I've actually been coaching the C-suite and chief customer officers for over 10 years now, and if there's not a deliberate set of competencies that are embedded inside of the organization, it's just, yeah, we care, yeah, we care, yeah, we care, which is great, but what are you going to do about it? And so what the reason I wrote the second book is to say, okay, if you care, you're going to get good at these five things. And if
uh-huh.
you don't get good at these five things, you're still pushing peas around on your plate.
So tell
so
us a little bit about the five things that people need to get good at. What can you give us one of them?
Sure. The first one, and I call them competencies, because a lot of times this work is about reacting to things, right? A leader will go out in the field and they'll talk to a customer or a salesperson and they'll say, oh, this is broken, we got to work on this. And then they'll get a survey thing back and they'll say, this is broken, we got to work on this. We got to take the reactivity out of this work and start with what customers actually did, voted with their feet, versus what they say they're going to do in surveys. Now, surveys have their rightful place, but my first big thing is managing and honoring customers as assets, meaning using the whole, just do simple math. If you brought in 50,000 customers, and I like whole numbers, but you lost 47,000 customers, something is not working out here. You're not doing enough good stuff to keep the ones that you, you could have grown incrementally by 47,000 customers worth if you didn't lose them. So we need to start with what the CFO, the CMO, and the CEO care about, which is the growth of the business. And we need to change language of leaders to get to use this simple math inside of every key meeting to kind of be open and honest and fearless about saying, look, as a result of the overall experience we delivered to our company, to our customers, did our company grow or not?
So now your book actually goes through all the five competencies, and I'm assuming that you put together this plan, survey, or that they can follow so that they can take each one of these competencies and share it within the organization?
Absolutely. It's a complete roadmap and a toolkit. And what it does is it walks at the end of each – at the end of the first chapter, there's a reality check audit to assess where you are today. And these are very operational, no lip service. It's, you know, do we all agree and line up around what we even call a new customer, right? Because if you're not consistent in what you even call a new customer, you can't roll it up to talk about it. And then at the end of each chapter, there is a I call them leadership recipe cards of the top five to seven things that if leaders just do those five to seven things, you'll get the ball rolling. And then all throughout the book, there's also something I call an action lab, which are tools and tips and my actual templates that you could start using. One of my most favorite things is I interviewed almost 35 chief customer officers around the world, and they tell their stories, and their little stories are called My Rock, My Story, because we all feel like Sisyphus pushing that rock up the hill. So there's a lot of things in there to help people. This is not a kumbaya book. It's a here's what you got to
right.
do and here's how to start doing it.
Love
yeah,
it.
And I'm looking at the chapter, one of the chapters now, and I like what you're asking here. You know, where are we now? We're early, advanced, and mature in each one of these scenarios. You know, the culture or the data enabling and wanting to know why. It's you've got a great outline here, and the action lab is. It's cool. That's something else I haven't seen. It's like, oh, here's a little action steps.
Yeah,
but,
like
know,
little
and the action lab.
Full of marbles. That's I don't know if you see that in chapter one. It's one of the things that we've done for a lot of big companies, especially is we'll bring the leaders in and we'll show them two bowls of marbles and we'll say, okay, we created a little mathematical equation, and here's a bowl of marbles with the equivalent of our new customers' volume and value. And then here's another bowl of marbles with the equivalent of our lost customer's volume value. And frequently, the lost customer bowl of marbles is just as full as the new customers. And now suddenly they get it. They're like, oh, my gosh, all this work, and we didn't keep more customers than we lost. And so suddenly it makes sense. And then, you know, you could say, hey, and you lost your marbles.
You lost your marbles. I know, I was waiting for that one. I love that. That's good.
But I give a lot of little tools like that we found that works that you wouldn't know otherwise, right? It's unless you've been doing this work, it's theory, and this takes it well past theory into implementable tools, which is why we also interviewed these chief customer officers around the world so they can talk about their version of these competencies. So totally different than the dog book.
It's what?
Very different from the dog book. The dog book is actually the I Love You More Than My Dog book. Think about it this way. If they were a set, I Love You More Than My Dog paints a picture of what kind of company you want to become. The Chief Customer Officer 2.0 book tells you what you need to do to arm wrestle the silos so you can get there.
Very good.
Excellent. And so, Gene, tell us an ugly story. Tell us a bad story. And you don't have to name names if you don't want to. But in all of your conversations and with all of the C-level executives and all of the companies that you've worked with, what's just, you know, one of the worst situations you've seen, and how did you help them turn it around?
Well, you know, I mean, some of it gets around what we call these kill a stupid rule kinds of things, and that's why competency one is not just measuring the customer as the asset, but honoring the customer as an asset. And, you know, I've had clients who have lost, you know, $20 million customers over a $35 policy change rule that they had put in place, right?
Oh.
And, you know, we shackle the front line. One of my clients, they had this, their software as a service business, they had this rule embedded into their business system where, you know, if you're a software as a service company, you get credits, which are kind of like you work through your credits as you work through your system and your services. And when you're done with your credits, they had this random rule where they would just turn off the client's system.
Right, you're shut off.
You got this multi-billion-dollar company who's all their software feeds, without notice, really, because who's looking at the credits, suddenly shuts down. And if you're thinking about the customer as an asset, you shouldn't be doing that, right? That's not good. And, you know, somebody put that rule in place because it kind of made sense, but when we start using, you know, the human side of our business brain, we think, gosh, shouldn't we call that customer first or be watching before they know that their credits are running down so that we can reach out to them and save them from going through the hassle of what's going to happen when it all turns off? Is that a good ugly story?
Yeah, that's it's frighteningly real. Let's put it that way. There are so many companies that I see sort of maybe not making a mistake to that monetary extent, but, you know, really, you know, losing a lot of dollars to try to, you know, save pennies. Let's put it that way.
I fly a lot. You know, you guys probably fly a lot. I have millions of miles. There's an airline I went into, and I had lost my card for their club room or whatever it's called. And I've flown so many miles with them that I'm permanently now in their upper echelon of status, right? I don't ever have to fly another mile, and I'll forever for the rest of my life be in their upper echelon. So that's who I am. And I go in there, and this is what is nonsensical. They don't give the front line this information. So I go in there, and I say, gosh, I lost my card. Can you mail me another one? And the woman with a straight face looks at me and says, that'll be $35, please.
Oh.
And the poor woman, it's not her fault.
Right,
right.
But there's nothing she can do for me. She feels like, you know what, I have to, like, do everything in my being not to have a little conniption fit, right? And this is what we do. We do this to the front line, too. All the, you know, these poor people, you know, there's no congruence of what you do in your business life and what you do to your mother, right? So the disconnect is also what creates unhappiness with employees.
By the way, that is the subtitle of your next book. I just want to throw that out there.
I'm actually working on that book right now. Yeah. That's so funny that you say that. I know, it's great, isn't it?
You know, but I love the airline example too, because when I was mentioning before about the idea of your previous version of the book being called, you know, getting past the lip service, that's where we are, especially with airlines in social media. I had an experience last week with an airline that I've been unfortunately held hostage to for about 10 years.
I call it
top
loyalty.
Yeah, right. And they're either, you know, airlines are either the smartest brands on earth or the dumbest. I think they're the smartest because when I go onto social media to air a grievance, they look at me and they look at my history and they look at the fact that I live in Chicago, hint, hint. And they're saying, well, he's never going to change airlines, so, you know.
Well, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were in the news.
Follow
today, let's put it that way, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, and it's gross. It's kind of gross.
And, yeah, but, you know, the idea of social media response to the customer experience is really humorous because I had an experience with them last week where I was having some travel issues, and I tweeted something, and they didn't respond to my tweet. I'm assuming, you know, knowing that they'll look at my history and think, well, who cares? This guy's stuck with this. He's going to fly with this anyway. Until their biggest competitor replied to me on Twitter. Then they responded
to me.
Yeah, right. And
their biggest competitor say?
Biggest competitor said, hey, why don't you come fly with us tomorrow?
Oh,
right?
Well,
which,
and that's
yeah.
a really important word in competency one, honor.
Yes.
Honor your customer's life, honor their time, honor their business, know it, and make sure that your customer knows you're honoring it. If you're not honoring it, there's that wedge. There's that question mark in your head.
Right. So, very good. This is Social Geek Radio, and tonight's guest is Jean Bliss, talking about her new book, or the newest version of her book, Chief Customer Officer 2.0. It's out now. You can get it on Amazon and all of the usual places. Jean, tell us also about your group, the Customer Experience Professionals Association.
Sure. So that's not the company I work for, of course. That is an association that my colleague Bruce Temkin and I created. We both have our own individual companies that we run, but we decided that we needed to come together and volunteer all of our time to establish an association for this ever-burgeoning field and discipline of customer experience. And so he and I kind of spitballed it together in 2011, and, you know, three and a half, four years later, we've got over almost 4,000 members around the world.
Wow.
Yeah,
impressive.
It's kind of like writing a book you didn't know you were writing. It was a lot of work.
and who are the members? Are they typically are they customer service reps? Are they salespeople? Are they marketing people? Who are these folks?
No, there's actually lots of people in organizations now with the title of customer experience. So vice presidents of customer experience, people who run customer listening programs, process improvement people who do customer experience design. They're not service reps. These are people who are leading kind of strategic elements of the business. Now, we have some CMOs that are part of it. We
uh-huh.
might have leaders of service operations, but these are a lot of times people who you know, we try to think of these roles as Switzerland, right? They don't necessarily run or reside only in one silo. They're leading this human duct tape exercise across the organization.
Got it. And is there a website or a Facebook page or any place where people can get some more information on joining the Customer Experience Professional Association?
Oh, of course. We're a full-blown company. It's a non-for-profit, so it's CXPA.org, and there's a whole ability to join as an individual member or as a corporate member. We have big conferences every year, and we have a fantastic networking element where if you've got a problem and you're trying to deal with it, lots of fellow zealots jump in, and then we have many, many local networking events all around the world.
Oh, terrific.
And
that's all available on the website cxpa.org.
Right. There it is.
And then,
yeah, I'm looking at it.
Yeah, it's pretty fantastic, and we just kind of made it up.
Excellent.
But now we've got and the great thing now that's happened is Bruce and I, you know, our job was to breathe life into it, and now we're so happy and thrilled that we've now kind of turned it over to practitioners to be the leaders of it. He and I have, you know, we worked through it about 3 to 4 years, and now the practitioners are running it. We're hiring an executive director soon. So it's going through the life cycle of maturity that an association should go through.
Excellent. Very good. We've got just about a minute left, so
can I also give my personal website? That would be great.
Oh, absolutely.
That's exactly where we're going. Where can people connect with you and learn a little bit more about your books and work?
Sure, and I just launched a brand new website with all kinds of tools and gifts for professionals in our area, and it's customer customerbliss.com. I'm married a guy named Bliss. How lucky am I? So customerbliss.com.
I looked at that last week, and it looked like it was new. It's very well done. I love your videos and love the new picture of you there on the website. And I think
Thank you. Yeah, that was a labor of love. In fact, I have what I call my bag of groceries peppered all throughout that, which is giving away a lot of information to nourish all of these CX executives and leaders.
Very good. Well, you
very
are
good.
Certainly
excellent.
A very caring and sharing person. I love it. And it was a thrill to talk to you again tonight. We'll send everybody off to your site. Thank you so much for joining us, and I'm going to be following you, and you're going to see me in your audience again really soon.
Oh, you're welcome. I can't see great to see your smiling faces.
Very good. Thank you so much, Jean. Have a great night.
Thanks. You too.
Thanks. Good night, everybody.